Welcome to Living the Quantum Dream with your host, Cynthia Sue Larson, inviting you to explore ideas about how you can enjoy a better way of life from one of today's top experts in quantum consciousness. Cynthia Sue Larson is a life coach and the best-selling author of Quantum Jumps, Reality Shifts, High Energy Money, and Aura Healing Meditations, who has been publishing the free monthly Reality Shifters e-zine since 1999 through realityshifters.com. Living the Quantum Dream with Cynthia Sue Larson is part of Evolutionary Voices for the Quantum Age, heard Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Hello. I'm Cynthia Sue Larson, and our guest today is Andy Myers, best-selling author, psychic medium, and inspirational speaker who makes radio and television appearances nationwide. He conducts sold-out events in cities throughout the nation and has lectured at numerous prestigious colleges. Andy is one of the most in-demand psychic mediums in the country, with loyal clients who wait up to 6 months for a private session with him. Andy is breaking the psychic stereotype with his down-to-earth approach to the spirit world. Andy's the author of the best-selling books Flying Paint Rollers from Heaven and Inspiration A to Z. His latest work, Not Your Average Angel Book, is available through Amazon.com. Welcome, Andy.
Hey, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
And before we get started, I've got these questions to ask you, but I just need to let people know how cool it was the way we met originally. I don't think I've ever met anyone under cooler circumstances.
It kind of seemed like fate, right? Right place at the right time.
And I know.
Was a little bit starstruck to be sitting at the table with you the first time we met.
Well, you're quite a star yourself, and I think I should tell people that this was at a time travel conference. I think it's just cool to mention that because it just sounds like, whoa.
Not to be confused with the Star Trek convention.
Exactly. A little bit different. So I'd like to start with the questions about the work that you're doing now. One other thing I want to say for people, if they haven't read Flying Paint Rollers from Heaven, what a great book. I really loved it. I haven't kept up with all your work, but I loved that one. Loved the whole idea behind it. And so you've just got this amazing way of keeping humor. That book had to do with, as I recall, I haven't read it recently, but it was just this whole incident with sort of a psychokinetic action going on with paint rollers, and then the connection with just what we might call a guardian angel or spirit of a loved one. And before we dive into your new book, would you mind talking about that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's Flying Paint Rollers from Heaven as a work that's always going to be near and dear to my heart because it was my first book, and it was a really simple format. It was a question and answer type of book where I kind of mapped out the most frequent questions that people tend to ask me as a psychic medium. And I answered those questions in that book. And I chose the title Flying Paint Rollers from Heaven. It's a kind of a goofy title, and you find out why on page 10. But yeah, it was an incident where I had moved into my grandma's house after she had passed away. And I had, I was putting my own touches on the house, and I put a fresh coat of paint on the kitchen walls and looked to the heavens and said, "Well, Grandma, what do you think about the new paint color?" And so I go downstairs and I'm cleaning up the paint brushes and paint rollers, and I kid you not, one of the metal paint rollers, it flew across the room and landed at my feet and skidded to a stop at my feet, and I kind of for a second, I questioned my sanity, but when I picked up the paint roller and felt that it was real, I said, one of two things happened. I've either seen a gravitational anomaly or a spirit, my grandma, just tossed the paint roller across the room to answer my question. Now, as far as whether she liked the new paint color or disliked it, the jury's still out, but it proved to me one way, you know, once and for all, that spirits can grab our attention by moving physical objects. So it is possible.
That's right. And I've heard similar things said from other wonderful authors also who I respect and trust. So this is not as far out as it may seem to people if they've never yet had such an experience. Hang in there. It could happen yet.
Everything's impossible until it's not, right?
That's right. So I'd love to talk about your new book. This is Not Your Average Angel Book. Again, you've got this gift for coming up with these cool titles, and I'd love to know how you came up with that one. Obviously, you're taking a slightly different approach with this book.
Well, and similar to Flying Paint Rollers from Heaven, and you yourself as an author might agree with this, but the title was actually the last thing that I came up with. You know, at the end of the book, there were so many different titles, you know, so many different options on the table. But I figured it's not truly not your average angel book. For one, unlike a lot of angel books that I've read and enjoyed and respected, a lot of angel books take more of a traditional religious approach to the phenomena of angels. And mine was more of a broad-based spiritual approach. So I think the content in the book will be well received by people of all faiths, all walks of life, people who are spiritual, people who are religious, people who are neutral altogether. And it's also a bit typical from your average angel book, because there is a lot of humor in it. It's pretty lighthearted, and there's actually two different sections of the book. So the first half focuses on spirit guides, our personal helpers that interact with us and guide us on a daily basis. And then the second half of the book is actually more about classic winged angels. So angel miracle stories of people who have seen angels and have been saved by angels. So that's actually two completely different phenomena. And so really in the book, you're getting a 2-for-1 special. So in those respects, I think it's a bit different than your typical angel book.
And what I love about your work is that you're uniquely able to address these kinds of topics because, you know, obviously, you know, you delve in this whole area, as we just mentioned, with flying paint rollers and so forth. So this is obviously something that we could get into on today. I'd love to. But going back to writing this book, and I'm just curious to know if you felt like angels were involved in the direction this book took, or how you got started with it in the first place.
You know, I think all of us are in a weird way kind of guided by angels more than we realize. Funny, and it's kind of funny, there's a story behind the story of every book, and the creation of this was actually a long process. What I had done is I had written a book. It was a 300-page manuscript, and it was kind of a sampler platter of all things spiritual and metaphysical. And one chapter in that book was about angels and guardian angels. And I gave it to one of my proofreaders and editors, and she said, you know, I like this manuscript, but I wish that each section was a little bit more in-depth. So I said, you know what, you're right. And I kind of did some soul searching, and I decided that I was going to take that chapter. It was a short, you know, 50-page chapter on angels, and I expanded on it, and I expanded it so much that, you know, it became this angels book, and it was a tedious process, as you know, writing can be. The writing is the fun part, but the editing gets a little bit time consuming. But it's a labor of love. So that was kind of the backstory on this. It was essentially a chapter that was expanded into a book.
Awesome. And that's a good way to do it, because then you're getting into the meat of the matter and the details and the kind of things that some people might not find. And like you said, this does absolutely sound like kind of a 2-for-1 special with the topics of both the spirit guides and winged angels involved. So this is the kind of thing, maybe this would be a great place to describe what is the difference between an angel and a spirit guide.
Yeah, sure. And it's a good question. It's a common question that people ask. And simply put, here we go getting kind of complex with the terminology, but simply put, a guardian angel and a spirit guide, I believe, are the exact same thing. Think of them as Coke and Pepsi, you know, same thing, different name. And what they are, what guardian angels are, is they're our personalized assistants. Each person on Earth has their own collection of guardian angels, whether you want to call it a group or a gaggle or a troop or a flock. We each have our own collection of them, whether that's 2 or 3 or 6 of them. And they're very individualized. In other words, they guide us and keep us on track, and they help us experience the destiny that we wanted to have when we came to this earth. Winged angels, on the other hand, classic winged angels, I like to think of them as almost a different species altogether. They're big, they're powerful. They often are the culprits when, you know, somebody's rescued from the burning building, or, you know, the cat saved, you know, the family cat saved, or somebody's rescued from, you know, nearly drowning in the ocean. And in many cases, these winged angels, they disappear, you know, before they can be interviewed by the evening news. And also in my section of classic winged angels, I also am clear to point out that in many cases, angels actually take the form of human beings. So I think they do so to fly under the radar, so to speak, and seem, you know, less conspicuous. But, you know, it's two different categories. But the bottom line is that both groups of, you know, helpers, they're very very influential in our life, and they're very helpful in practical ways. There's even a story in my book about how one of my guardian angels, Henry, helped me start my snowblower one day. He gave me some guidance that allowed me to fire up my snowblower just in the nick of time. And so they can be very practical in their assistance. It's not just, you know, wishing us well and standing behind us, praying for us. They're very active in our lives, and they help us in ways that I think a lot of people would be blown away to realize how helpful they can be.
That's really cool. And one of the things that I love about, I think a lot of people love angels, and most people in the line of work that you and I are both in, we're helping people as coaches and sometimes talking with their angels. You know, this is something that I've felt a little bit nervous initially. I still do feel a bit nervous in scientific circles bringing this up, because unless people are already on board with the idea, it sounds outrageous to say that we believe in these sentient, intelligent entities that are kind of non-corporeal. That is to say, they have no physical measurable attributes. You can't say, well, I mean, you and I could probably see them in our mind's eye. We could say that one's really tall and we know what we're talking about, but there's no objective way necessarily to get a bunch of people in a room to all agree exactly on the details. And so that's what I mean, but it's not exactly within the realm of science where you can predict that something will occur or not occur and so forth. For me, the guardian angels have always been my heroes. I mean, to me, they seem like what I want to be when I grow up. And I love the way, especially these winged angels, you're talking about archangels, I think they're in that group. And they're remarkable because they seem like they wish the best for everyone concerned. Right there, they kind of got me at that one. It's like, yay, they're not messing things up. And they also seem to bring people to that state of how good things can get, to the highest level of what you might call oneness, source, God, whatever. And just by their presence, by their touch, it seems like their very being with us has the power to transform things completely. I don't know if you get into archangels at all, or if that's part of your winged angels.
Yeah, I actually touch on that subject in my in the classic winged angels section, and talk a little bit about the archangels and the angel hierarchy, and some historical and, you know, historical fun facts and pop culture fun facts. And, yeah, I agree. It's kind of hard to study them in a scientific fashion. I mean, you know, if you're studying sea turtles or dolphins, you can go out to the ocean and tag them and monitor them and track them. And, angels, as far as I know, no one's ever tagged an angel, but, in my book, there are some stories of people who have literally, you know, stood within arm reach of an angel that appeared in their home. And what's kind of interesting, or maybe even intimidating, if you will, is that many sightings of winged angels, people report that they're absolutely massive, you know, 8 feet tall, 10 feet tall. I've heard cases of people seeing them in their living room, and when the angel stretched out its wings, they literally, it was from wall to wall, you know, like a 20-foot wingspan. So, and perhaps that's why they are also known to take human form, to be a little less imposing and to go unnoticed, if you will.
That's really great. I mean, I'm just spellbound because this is one of my favorite subjects. And I think when I look around the world, I see that people from all different spiritual paths, they often have some background of angelic stories. And even people you think might not believe in angels do. Quite a bit of support. And I think that comes from the fact that a lot of people, just through word of mouth, have had their own experiences with angels. So I imagine you must hear a lot of angel-related stories in your line of work, doing what you do.
Yeah, I actually do. That's one of my favorite parts of the job. I hear angel stories, miracle stories. I hear a lot of just a lot of really cool, interesting occurrences from my clients. And that was another cool part about while working on this book, which, you know, took, gosh, you know, the better part of 4 years to write this. But as people, as my clients and people who run in my circles, as they caught wind that I was writing an angel book that included some true stories, everyone kept sharing with me more stories. And so I kept adding them and adding them, and the book kept getting longer and longer. And I said, I finally had to cap it off and just say, okay, I'm going to have to write another book in the future that's nothing but just pure, true angel stories, because you could probably fill 10 books with them, and still you'd have people coming out of the woodwork trying to share their stories. So it's inspiring, it's heartwarming, and, you know, unlike the two other books that I've written, this book especially, a huge amount of credit goes to the brave people, you know, my clients who stepped forward and were willing to go public and share this story with the world. And I can only hope I did them justice by, you know, accurately conveying how beautiful their experience was.
I love that. And is there one particular story that you'd be able to share with us from the book, one that comes to mind right now?
Yeah. Well, there's actually a couple historical ones that people will read. Joan of Arc regularly interacted with angels, and they kind of guided her military decisions. And George Washington interacted with angels. And there was actually a group of Soviet cosmonauts back in the 1980s that had an encounter in outer space where they saw angels. But one that's a little bit more down to earth and personal, one that comes to mind was the story of a little girl named Leanne, who was born with just a really sensitive stomach and really horrible acid reflux. And as an infant, it was so bad that she was having a hard time keeping food down and having a hard time eating because of the digestive problems. They actually had to keep her in her car seat 24 hours a day, sitting upright. She couldn't lay down. And they were at their wit's end, and doctors didn't know what to do. And long story short, she was strapped into her car seat and was and then her car seat was placed in the crib. So she was taking a nap in the nursery. And her mother was folding laundry in the next room, and she heard a little commotion in the nursery. And when she went in there, standing just outside of Leanne's crib was an angel, a beautiful, beautiful female angel with long, dark hair. And she turned and she faced Leanne's mom, and she reached over the crib and she gently touched the baby on the cheek. And the baby stirred a little bit as if she could feel the contact, but Leanne never actually woke up. And then just as suddenly as the angel appeared, she just disappeared, just poof, was gone immediately. And of course, Leanne's mom, you know, she's filled with adrenaline, and she calls her husband at work and says, "You're not going to believe what I just saw." Well, and what ended up happening was they took Leanne back to the doctor just a few days later, and they ran some tests, and they come to find out that in the days and weeks that followed, her condition not only improved, but it completely went away. And she was able to eat again. She was able to lay down. She was just, you know, 100 times healthier. And so they naturally assumed that whatever that angel did, they took away that health problem from Leanne. And now she's an adult with kids of her own, and the condition has never returned.
Wow. I'm just curious if they ever got like a portrait or sketch of an artist's rendition of what that angel looked like.
You know, it'd be a good thing to ask Leanne to see if her mom was artistically inclined to you know, draw a rendition of what she saw. But you know, it's one of those things where I think a lot of people want to believe, but what will push you over the edge and force you to believe is if you have your own encounter. I mean, can you imagine the rush of adrenaline that must give you to see something from a different realm, from a different reality, standing right in front of you? It just boggles the mind, doesn't it?
And you can tell it's different because you didn't mention if it's sparkling or can kind of see through, or if there's just this sublime kind of otherworldly grace or color. there are many qualities that these, that can't, I guess what I'm getting at is when you see things that are obviously not quite from our reality, they can have another look to them. I don't want to prompt you or add too much to the story, but I'm curious if there were any of those kind of attributes that Leanne's mom noticed.
Sure. Yeah, and you're right. I mean, when you hear sightings, whether it's a ghost or an angel or, you know, any odd anomaly, a lot of people do report that they're wispy or that they're see-through or they sparkle or shine or glow a little bit differently. In the case of Leanne, her mom actually reported that the angel was pretty darn solid, looked as solid as a regular human being standing there. But the figure did have wings, noticeable wings. They were beautiful. And she said the angel was just the most beautiful woman that she had ever seen. And so it just truly otherworldly. I mean, you're talking about if the angel really did disappear, you know, you're talking about physics working a bit differently than it does here on Earth. You know, something that can completely dematerialize. That's beyond anything that we can experience.
Not for this show. I mean, you happen to be on Living the Quantum Dream, and many of my readers have read my books. And one of the things I've been studying for the last 2 decades is having to do with actually people, things, objects, and definitely, yes, people sometimes appearing or disappearing like into or out of thin air, and happens a lot more often than our culture tends to acknowledge. So, you know, that can totally happen. And to me, I am looking for physical explanations as what's going on, because it doesn't mesh with our classical physics approach, but that kind of discussion is perfect for this radio show. So thank you for mentioning it. I'm glad you went there.
I do have to say, Cynthia Sue, I've had more and more conversations with people in recent months that, you know, and I'm not bringing it up, it's other people bringing it up, but a lot of people mentioning that they're starting to question whether we're living in some sort of a matrix or a computer simulation, because a lot of people are reporting what they call like glitches in the matrix. You know, they're seeing things that are impossible, you know, things that are said to be impossible. They're seeing things, like you said, appear, disappear, change colors, change forms, and with no real explanation in mind. So when you take all that into account, maybe angels are not too far-fetched after all.
I think they might even have something to do with it, actually. You know, it does occur to me. So,
yeah, good point.
Which is, and I don't usually talk too much about angels. I do when I talk with clients, of course. And the first way that I got involved working with clients was, I don't know if you know this story, but 3 women called me my unlisted phone number. And all 3 of them, the first thing they wanted to ask me was, can you talk to my angels? And I, what had happened before that is I'd been talking to my own angels, putting them off, procrastinating, sort of delaying forever that I would ever do any kind of life coaching. And I do also instruct them, give me messages in 3s. If I'm being difficult, just bring me the message in a repetition, a group of 3 that I can't miss. Well, this one I couldn't miss. So, I mean, I had these 3 women and they all called me, and I couldn't believe they needed me to talk to their angels, because I asked each of them, how did you get this number? And each one individually said, my angels gave it to me. They didn't know each other. They didn't know I had a website.
Right.
Blew my mind. So.
Well, and you know, it's kind of humorous at the same time, because you're a very intuitive person, and as we all are, I guess. But, you know, no matter how intuitive you are, sometimes we are likely to miss a sign or a message, or, you know, so I think it's really smart that you're saying deliver it in 3s, because tell you what, no matter how intuitive you are, sometimes we're still prone to missing things, aren't we?
That's right. Yeah, it's easy to miss things. I think we're human and this sort of thing happens, so it's good to be gentle with oneself.
That's true.
So I'd love to know what kind of encounters you've had. Obviously, you've had encounters with angelic beings and with spirits. We started the show talking about that. When people ask you if there's any kind of proof that they exist, you can say, of course, you've experienced them. I love the way your book brings up historical accounts that are very cross-referenced, and, you know, they're very solid as these things can get. So, but I'd love to know, for your own experience, what has convinced you the most of the reality of angels and spirits, and what were your early experiences? What were your coolest experiences?
Yeah, well, you know, I remember being, I think I was right on the cusp of being a teenager, and I was coming back from a vacation with my family, and, you know, I was just looking for reading material sitting in the back seat of the car. It was a long drive, and my aunt hands me a book, and it was just a book filled with angel stories. And at that point, I think I was just hooked, and not just on angels, but on spiritual and metaphysical subjects in general. And, you know, throughout my life, I've had a lot of interesting encounters, so many things. One that's not even in my book, that, you know, granted, there's been so many experiences, you kind of have to be choosy of which ones make the cut. But years ago, I was trying to merge onto the interstate here in Omaha, Nebraska, and it was a really busy interstate. It was rush hour, and as I'm winding, down the on ramp, my car, for lack of a better term, it shuts off. It's like it was dying, and I wasn't touching the brake, but it was braking and slowing down. And not only that, I let go of the steering wheel because I was so shocked and I didn't know what was happening. I let go of the steering wheel and it starts to steer itself. My car turned to the right and it pulled over basically onto the shoulder of the on-ramp. And then it straightened itself out. And I'm looking at my steering wheel and it's moving right and it's moving left as if it's under intelligent control. And naturally, I go down to put on the brakes and I notice the brake pedal's fully pushed in as if somebody's stomping on it. And after a couple minutes of just sitting there dumbfounded, I figured I'd try to start my car. It started right up as if nothing was wrong with it. And then I continued to merge onto the interstate. And in hindsight, I could only conclude that an angel had literally taken over the steering wheel. And, you know, I concluded that maybe I was forced to stop there because had I kept going, maybe I would have been in a car accident. So, and I'll never know why that happened. But one thing is for sure, my car was under intelligent control and I wasn't supposed to get onto the interstate at that exact moment.
Yeah, I do believe that we are tuned in, we're connected to each other, and we can absolutely have access to that sort of subconscious or beyond regular consciousness information. And this is the realm that angels play in. This is, as you said early on, perhaps the source of quite a bit of our behavior, quite a bit of our inspiration. It could even explain a lot of the reasons that, you know, people have extraordinary experiences where they don't necessarily see an angel. But if they pay close attention like you are, they might notice there was a definite angelic presence at that time.
Exactly. And for those who, you know, are looking for proof of guardian angels or winged angels, I always explain it like this. The way that they operate is kind of like gravity. You know, you can't always see them, but you can see the effects of their work. So, you know, gravity is an invisible presence in our life, but if you were to push your coffee mug off the edge of your desk, you would see gravity at work as it fell to the ground. So, similarly, you know, we can't often see our guardian angels. They don't often materialize at the foot of our bed and wave hello. But the proof of their existence is the ways in which they guide us and help us and speak to us. And, you know, it's generally really subtle. A lot of people, you know, get in the habit of listening to their conscience or that little inner voice that speaks to us and, you know, tells us to, you know, don't go your usual way to work, you know, take a left here, or the little inner voice that says, you know, oh, I better stop here or go there, or, you know, and we get in the habit of making the assumption that this is our own dialogue, this is our own subconscious speaking to us, but many people don't realize that our guardian angels often hijack that little walkie-talkie in our head to deliver those messages. And they don't sound foreign. They don't sound like they're coming from an external source, but oftentimes they are. And if we listen to those instincts, we generally stay out of trouble and on track.
I think that's great advice. And hopefully it'll encourage people to listen a little more deeply when they meditate, to tune in. Notice if you're getting some of that good advice. Because obviously it's going to be good. We're talking about angels on this program today. So this is obviously the kind of visitors you'd want to your house. You'd want them in your life. You know, these are the kind of visitors that tend to make things better. They don't make things worse. They clean it up. They brighten the energy. They give you an uplifted feeling. So if people are wondering, like, how could I tell? I don't know if you cover any of that in your book. Maybe I should let you go for it.
No, I understand totally what you're saying. I think the one of the hardest parts for our guardian angels is to find that happy middle ground between being helpful enough, but yet giving us enough freedom and free will to figure things out on our own. And one analogy that I use in the book is my daughter. She was one. She was 1 year old at the time that I was in the thick of writing this book, and she's 3 years old now. But at the time of writing this, she was learning how to walk. And like, a nervous new parent, I tended to hover over her as she was stumbling around because I didn't want her to bump her head on the coffee table or fall down the stairs. And, you know, then the other part of me is thinking, well, you know, I should give her enough space, and she's going to fall down, but she's going to have to learn to pick herself back up because that's how you learn to walk. So scale that up tremendously. And I think that must be how guardian angels view our lives. You know, they want to help. They want to take us by the hand and hold us and coddle us. But if they do that too much, we'll never figure it out on our own. So I think they do give us the right amount of free will. And although they may know that we're, you know, for example, maybe we're on the verge of marrying somebody who's not going to end up being compatible, or if we were about to take a job that wasn't going to end up being a good fit, you know, your guardian angels might give you enough freedom to do that, knowing that it might not end well, but we'll recover and we'll learn from it and we'll gain knowledge and wisdom and experience. And in the end, it's important that we have those experiences, whether they're good, bad, or indifferent. So it's a delicate balancing act. So in a roundabout way, I think our guardian angels are kind of like makeshift parents. You know, they wish us well, but at the end of the day, our lives are ours to live.
Yeah, that's why they call them guardians, obviously. It makes sense to me. Well, that's great. And it makes me wonder what else is covered in the Not Your Average Angel book. Obviously, it's got these two big sections, one on the spirit guides, one on the winged angels. Obviously, you're covering these historical patterns and lots of stories. I'd like to know, for readers who are interested in, you know, becoming more angelic in their lives, I don't know if you have any readers like that, but I can imagine you must, because you're a very uplifting presence yourself, and I think you tend to attract those kind of people to you. So can people read the book and kind of come away feeling like not only do they feel like they're more in touch with angels, but kind of like putting them on the path? Or maybe it's just me that wants to be an angel when I grow up.
Well, and you're a very knowledgeable person, Cynthia Sue, but I think no matter how much knowledge you acquire, it just makes you thirsty for more. So yeah, I'd say that just about everyone who picks up this book will be looking to further their spiritual progress and to, you know, learn practical ways to communicate with their guardian angels. And there is a lot of practical content in here. It's not just feel-good stories. It is, tangible advice and guidance and suggestions on how to make your connection with your guardian angels more personal and more meaningful. And, one of the important points in here that I make is a lot of people ask me, you know, what's the best way to communicate with my guardian angels? And I always remind them that, you know, you don't need to, when you talk to them, you don't need to jazz it up with any fancy language. Not unless you want to. You know, I talk to my guardian angels like I talk to my best friends. You know, and they can generally hear you, whether you're speaking to them out loud or just quietly through your prayers. And furthermore, I tell people, you know, get in the habit of talking to your guardian angels and asking them for help, even if you don't know their names, even if you don't know who exactly your guardian angels are. Just say, hey, guides, you know, hey, guardians, hey, anybody listening up there? They don't get annoyed. They don't get impatient. They're nothing but supportive. So you can ask them for one favor or 100 favors a day. And certainly there's things that they can and can't help with. It just depends on your request. But it never hurts to put a request in their inbox. That's what I always say.
Love it. That's great advice. And really, I think it gets to the heart of what a lot of people are. Some of the questions I hear the most have to do with, people will say to me like, okay, Cynthia, I'm talking to my angels because you say they're real. And I believe they're real, but I can't hear them, you know? And, yeah. And they get so frustrated. Some people say like, how come I can't hear them? You know, what can I do? So I don't know if you get into that in your book, like when people feel that frustration and they just want to hear an angel talk back for some reason, you know, they want to hear that kind of voice or that support, but they're feeling like, okay, I'm not getting it. I can't see them. People see them, they hear them. I'm left, you know.
Well, and it's a common a grievance that I hear from people, and I do address that in my book. And in a nutshell, my philosophy has always been, if you're not constantly hearing and seeing the presence of your guardian angels, it's not necessarily a bad thing. It could indicate that they actually have faith that you're doing okay, that you're on track, and that you're doing a pretty good job yourself without them having to intervene constantly. So, you know, kind of like they say, no news is good news. But, you know, on the flip side, if you do feel the presence of your guardian angel, don't panic thinking that something is wrong. Sometimes they just drop by just because they love you, you know, so don't take it as a bad sign that they're around. Don't take it as a bad sign that they're not around. It's just all individualized, and there's a million reasons why they could be giving you space or being a little bit more active. So, and furthermore, one thing also that I elaborate on is when we're going through a crisis or a difficult time in our life, the emotional stress from that sometimes clouds our intuition a little bit. So it's kind of ironic, with clouded intuition, you might not sense the presence of your guardian angels, even though they're actually there, you know?
Right. That's worth noting. And something else that I recommend to people is just, there are ways you can fine tune that subtle receptivity of high sense perceptivity, and you can enhance your ability to gradually, it can be a gradual thing though. So when people feel like, I just want to see them, I want to hear them, you know, it might happen suddenly, it might not happen at all, it might happen slowly. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's like anything else. It's a gradual process. You know, you have to learn how to crawl before you walk, before you run, and it's like anything. With time, it gets a little more natural and a little bit more comfortable to interact with your guardian angels and to pick up on the subtle clues and hints that they're giving you. And, you know, truthfully, I sometimes like to think of our guardian angels almost like teachers at school. You know, when we were in school, and maybe some of the listeners still are, you know, and let's say that you're taking a test and you can't quite figure out the answer. Well, your teacher is not allowed to give you the answer, but she might give you a couple clues so that you can figure it out yourself and you know, come to the conclusion of which is the right answer. So similarly, our guardian angels give us clues, and then ultimately we figure it out on our own.
Right. I love that. That's a great example. Clues so that we can figure it out for ourselves, because that free will, that free choice, it's a little bit like Star Trek with that, forget what that... non-involvement clause. Do you remember the original Star Trek? Oh, I'm spacing out.
it's huge though. I mean, free will is so, you know, the more, you know, I've practiced as a psychic medium and as the years have gone by, I actually give far less predictions of the future than I used to, just because I finally concluded that, you know, in many cases, free will trumps destiny. You know, so I don't recall who said this famous quote, but it's one of my favorites, that the best way to predict the future is to create it. And so, yeah, of course, there's a lot of free will, and our guardian angels give us enough wiggle room to make our lives as wonderful as we want them to be.
That's right. I think it's a non-interference directive also. I just finally...
There it is.
It came. I used to be a really hardcore Star Trek fan. I loved that vision of the future with people getting along together. Love that to come back. But yeah, so going back to these questions people often ask about angels, and this idea that, you know, people, on the one hand, we want help, and on the other hand, we don't want too much help. So I think that's a great way to see angels and to start recognizing, what does the world look like when you picture angels everywhere? Because I think that's what your book is doing. If I might be so bold, not having read it yet, but just knowing you.
It is. They truly are everywhere. And now, that being said, don't want to make anybody nervous thinking your guardian angels are not there when you're, you know, taking a shower or doing something that requires privacy. That during those moments, they pull away and respect our boundaries. But when we need them, they're often there on the sidelines of our life, you know, acting as our cheerleaders and our coaches, and they never give up on us. They never they never strike. They never form a union. They never storm out and quit. And they're tireless and effortless and fiercely devoted. And unlike humans, you know, guardian angels and winged angels, they don't have egos. You know, they don't help us to win awards or to get a pat on the back or to, you know, receive a congratulations. They do so because they love us unconditionally.
That's what I love so much. I think that's why, if you ask me what's the reason that I would guess, because I wouldn't know for sure, but why would I guess that angels are known around the world on every continent, in every culture? And going back thousands of years, I would say you've just hit the nail on the head. That's it. I think it's just like the reason some people love dogs so much. It's because they love you no matter what. And it's that feeling when you've met that kind of helpful presence and you can feel that much love. And you know it's always there. Nothing can shake it loose. Nothing can break it.
Yep, absolutely. And that's what it is. I think that's why, like you said, angels are a phenomena that's known all around the world on every continent. And that's why I thought it was a noteworthy subject to write about in the first place is, you know, according to, I think it was a 2011 Gallup poll, 76% of people around the world believe in angels in one form or another. And, you know, it's a phenomena. It's not trendy. You know, it's a phenomena that's withstood the test of time. There's mention of angelic beings back all the way dating back to ancient Sumeria. And some of those texts and scriptures influenced the Jewish people of Jewish faith. And then those stories later got passed down to Christians. And then later those stories were morphed and you know, taken over by by other religions and, you know, Islam, and it just transcends all cultures and all time. And, you know, as they say, a lot of legends and myths, they begin with a kernel of truth. You know, what are the odds that multiple people of multiple eras in every part of the world were all just making up the same exact stories? You know, these people were reporting things that were based on true events. And although they couldn't quite put it in, they could only put it into a context that they were familiar with at the time, they were reporting beings who were quite different than humans.
Yeah, I'm glad you pointed that out. And that number 76% sounds right to me. I remember when I saw it, it was the kind of majority that if that was some kind of a political contest, that would be a landslide. So I was like, okay, Absolutely. We have a landslide in favor of angels. And I'm so glad that you are here talking about them today. And another question people sometimes seem to get stuck in their heads is this idea about deceased family members and whether it's possible or whether how often it might happen or if it is possible that these dead family members could go on to become guardian angels in our lives.
Well, it's a frequent question that I'm asked, and it's one that people ask on the edge of their seat because, you know, with fingers crossed, they want to know that it's possible that, you know, their aunt or their grandpa or, you know, a relative can become a guardian angel upon their death. And the fact is, yes, they can. It's a bit more rare, I would say. You know, it's hard to put a figure to it, but I'd say only maybe one out of every 10 guardian angels or so is a family member who's passed away. Most of our guardian angels were assigned to us, or rather selected by us, before we ever came into the world. And but there are rare exceptions. There's really two prerequisites that need to be met in order for a family member to become a bonus guardian angel when they pass away. The first being that it would have to be a family member that you were extremely close with. And the second factor is it would have to be a family member who passed away when you were still relatively young. So let's say your grandpa is your best buddy in the whole world, and he dies when you're, you know, 12 or 15 years old, when you're still relatively young. It'd be totally within the realm of possibility for him to jump on board and become an additional guardian angel to the two or three or four that you already have. And, you know, even if a family member passes away and they're not officially your guardian angel, it's still okay. No need to panic, because even if they're not your guardian angel, they can still come around and visit and help and keep tabs on you. The real difference is that a guardian angel is a job title, and it's a responsibility that they take rather seriously. So in this hypothetical situation, if grandpa did become your guardian angel when he passed away when you were 12 years old, it simply means that he's going to be around quite often on a daily basis, at the very least on a weekly basis. And therefore, it would cause you to feel that person's presence much more often than other family members that you had lost.
I'm glad you pointed that out, too, about the distinction with it being a job title, because I think you can assure people, no problem. Our loved ones can become angelic. They can be almost in some ways easier to access than they might have been in regular daily life sometimes. I mean, it could happen.
Yeah, it's funny you mention that. I've had plenty of clients throughout the years say that they actually feel closer to a family member since their death than they did when they were alive. So it's kind of funny how that works. I guess sometimes when we're in spirit form, it, you know, it shrinks our ego and it breaks down barriers, and it tends to make people a little bit more accessible and less guarded. So maybe that's why we sometimes feel closer after their death than we did when they were alive.
That's true. And I see a level of focus that sometimes when I'm connecting with those who've passed on, sometimes not always, but a lot of dearly departed seem like they're really crystal clear with their thoughts. And I guess what I'm pointing out is the difference between people. It's easier for me to talk to dead people than the spirits of some who are alive right now, who are busy with preoccupied thoughts. Yes. Their minds are all over the place. With some notable exceptions, you know, people who meditate a lot, who are very spiritual, they can be almost as good as dead. And those are great. I mean, then it's really clean. Okay.
I know exactly what you mean. And on a similar note, I think animals sometimes are also easier to get along than living people.
Oh, so much more. Yeah, they're so clean and clear.
So pure.
So we're talking about guardian angels, talking about their job. They have jobs. That's a title. So let's talk about if that job had some duties assigned to it. What kind of job description does this look like? And what are they able to help us with, and what can't they help with?
Yeah, well, generally each guardian angel will have a specialty. So a specialty that correlates and to our life in relevant ways. So for example, you know, take somebody, for example, who maybe works in TV or radio, or, you know, perhaps even an author, somebody who needs to be a very effective communicator. It would be totally plausible that that individual might have a guardian angel who specializes in communication. And that would be their job title, the communication guardian angel, you know, for clarity of thought. And under that umbrella of communication would be, you know, they might help a person be a better listener. They might help a person be more articulate, or, you know, even write an email with no typos. These are all different forms of communication. And but each guardian angel helps with has at least one specialty such as that. But I mean, truly any attribute or human characteristic that you can think of would be a potential focus point for a guardian angel. I've seen guardian angels that specialize in helping with communication or trust or leadership abilities or creativity. I've seen guardian angels who help with health, others who help with patience, others who help their person to be more assertive and more confident. So truly, there's a limitless, endless array of specialties that they have. And like I said, each one typically helps us out in some facet in our everyday life.
In fact, I'm glad you mentioned that too, because one thing I noticed when I was first, I mentioned I was talking to my angels before I got started doing the intuitive life coaching that I do. And one thing that struck me was I started getting to know myself, but I was so shocked by the attributes that some of my guardian angels possessed, and just noticing, how come I've got so many healers? and then I was like, oh no, does that mean I'm a healer? It was very funny, my reaction to it and just the observation. So obviously when you work as a psychic medium, you're able to help people by interacting with their guardian angels. And how does that work usually for you?
Well, you know, during session when I'm communicating with the guardian angels of my client here in my office, it's kind of a mixed array of senses. So sometimes the guardian angels will tell me information, and then I simply parrot it back to my client. Sometimes they show me images or send me feelings. And it's all kind of a mixed bag, and it's sometimes even hard to translate and to put into words. But, you know, generally the information checks out as true, and that's what has always made me a believer. You know, if these were figments of our imagination, if these characters were imaginary friends that we were just conjuring up to make ourselves feel better, they wouldn't be possible. They wouldn't know so much about our everyday life. So, you know, when these guardian angels tell me information, detailed, intimate information about the person sitting in front of me and it checks out as true, you know, therein lies the validation that these guardian angels are as real as you and I, and they do see what we're doing on a daily basis. But yeah, it's a mixed array of senses to hear them and see them and feel them. And they're so wise. I don't know how else to say it. They're so wise. They're so clear and precise when they speak to me, you know, and as humans, you know, we're prone to stumbling over our words and being fuzzy brained, and guardian angels seem to relay their information to me really effortlessly.
I love that about them too. And this has been such a great show. It's going so fast. when you're talking about this, I realize that I've been conversing with angels since I was quite young, because they actually saved my life when I was 5, because I just remembered what it was like before I was born, wanted to go back, and they actually did an intervention, which was remarkable. And then I find it interesting and challenging, actually, to hold the truth of the presence of angels current in mind in daily life, when so few people actually, so many people believe in them. We got 76%. But then to actually walk around and say, and I'm doing this because my angels guided me, you're going to get people looking at you, you know, you're going to get those looks.
I know. And when you think about it, it's rather unfortunate because, you know, people, it's widely accepted that you're supposed to believe in such things, but then to say that you interact with them suddenly makes you insane. And that doesn't make any sense to me. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, but I think, you know, all it takes is a few people coming out of the woodwork and, you know, admitting openly, publicly that they, you know, that they hear and interact with their guardian angels. And then I think that gives other people confidence to, you know, come out and admit the same thing. And, you know, before you know it, I think these future up and coming generations, these younger generations, they're just growing up a bit more open-minded than generations past. So in the future, I wholeheartedly believe that we'll have a new little breed of old souls and these rainbow children and crystal children and whatever you want to call them, kind-hearted, intuitive souls. And talk of angels is going to be like talk of the weather. You know, it's going to be something that's just widely accepted, more so in future generations.
Oh, man, let's hope so. And I'd love to, on that note, ask how people can find out more about your wonderful work and get in touch with you, because you're obviously quite an expert. You walk your talk, you live this, and oh my gosh, I'm just so impressed and honored to have you on the show today. Thank you so much. But how can people find you?
It's my pleasure, Cynthia Sue. Thanks again. And a good landing pad for any information that you're looking for regarding my services or my books or my live public events, you can find it all at my website, which is andymyersonline.com. And Myers is spelled M-Y-E-R-S. So I do have private sessions and group readings and public events and the whole nine yards, but it's all at andymyersonline.com. And thanks so much for having me on. You know, time flies when you're talking about angels. I can't believe how quickly an hour went.
I know. It's just amazing. And if people want to find your books, can they find them there also, or would they go somewhere else? What would you recommend for?
Yeah, you can go to my website and you can find my book rather easily there. The other option would be just to directly go to Amazon.com and search for Not Your Average Angel Book. And you can download it in paperback or ebook, and you can order it that way. I think it's still on pre-sale right now, so the official launch date is October 1st. So just in time for the weather to change and you get yourself a cup of coffee and a good book and settle down. And I think it'll make for some good reading. It'll certainly lift people's spirits. That's my hope anyway.
And go ahead and get Flying Paint Rollers from Heaven if you're waiting and you're just chomping at the bit. You can't stand it. You want to read Andy talking about these amazing things. Please get that, because I can personally endorse that. And then I'm sure that your other book, the second book that you wrote, is equally excellent, because you have a way about you of just bringing things, even things that seem way out there and kind of like you can't quite touch them or see them. Andy has the gift to make them feel real and to bring it down to earth. So I got to thank you with all my heart for being on the show today, Andy. It's such a pleasure.
Well, I really appreciate it. Thanks again.
And hope you have a great day, and keep asking, how good can it get?
thank you for listening to this edition of Living the Quantum Dream with your host, Cynthia Sue Larson of RealityShifters.com. Join Cynthia next time in visualizing and accessing whole new worlds of possibility on Evolutionary Voices for the Quantum Age. Heard Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.